going to approve a loan over that many years. So I went through it, really. But it ended up fine, baseboards and all. Kenya Moore. It was fun, Shade, until she took it too far. Sheree Whitfield. People always want a moment. And of course, they want it with me because they know I will come back. I'm not going to sit back and let you talk to me any kind of way. Afterward, I got a call from someone who was like, Kenya wanted me to tell you that she hopes you didn't take any of that personally. And I said, oh, hell no. It's personal. It may not have been if you had given me a heads up, but you ain't given me no heads up, so it's personal. Carlos King. Kenya's the best villain Atlanta has ever had for this very reason. And I always say, you gotta protect the villains and respect the villains because they're necessary. Sheree Whitfield. Yeah, Kenya knows how to make good TV. Even if she's not getting along with you, she knows it's good for the show. She's not gonna take it so personal where, I'm not gonna work with this person ever. She knows at the end of the day, it's a bigger picture than just her. She sure did piss me off, and I sure did piss her off, but we're good. Meanwhile, Portia got her peach back in season 8, but found herself in the middle of another physical fight, this time with Cynthia. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. That was another unfortunate incident that left us all shocked. Cynthia Bailey. We were on a boat, drinking and having fun. I hadn't eaten, nobody had. At some point after a lot of drinks, Portia said something like, whatever, bitch. Now, while we can call each other bitch all day long, at the time, in that moment, in that context, it rubbed me the wrong way. She was hovering over me, antagonizing me as if to say, I know you ain't gonna do nothing. Which pissed me off more because people definitely mistake my kindness for weakness. And I don't want to fight a bunch of grown-ass bitches, but I will defend myself when I'm cornered without question. Sheree Whitfield. That fight was so crazy. I remember looking over and seeing them tussling, and I'm like, oh my gosh. None of us knew that it would elevate to that level. Cynthia Bailey. I may have overreacted with some things that I was saying during our first back and forth. But the moment I decided to excuse myself and go to the other side of the boat, now she should have stayed where she was and let me the hell alone. But that's not what happened. She came to where I was, sat herself down on the chair where I was lying down, and continued to come at me. And knowing that Portia had gotten physical in the past, my instinct was, if she tries to hit me, I'm going to defend myself. So once she stood up and raised over me, remember, I was in a vulnerable position lying down. My instinct was just to kick her off me. Carlos King. I saw it getting there again and pulled Portia back, just holding her down until she calmed down. Cynthia Bailey. I'm grateful for Carlos King to this day, because if Portia had gotten loose from him, I would have been toast, probably. I'm not a fighter. That's not what I do. Portia would have thrown me off that boat. Lauren Escalin. Portia was not disciplined for her fight with Kenya, but she was for her fight with Cynthia, because it was like, okay, this can't be happening again. So we required Portia to go to anger management on camera. It was the network's way of saying, we take this seriously. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. We want to send a very clear message to all of our cast members that this wasn't okay. We loved Portia and wanted to keep her on the show, but this wasn't a way she could continue behaving. Cynthia Bailey. I was nervous I would get into trouble for defending myself, but I got a call from the network and they told me, we watched the tape, Cynthia. You had every right to defend yourself. Still, it was not my proudest moment. I felt bad immediately because I have compassion for people. I'm not a monster and I'm not crazy. But I'm not on this show to be beat up either. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. It was all part of Portia's growth because today, Portia would never do anything like that. There were other issues she was dealing with back then and she's learned to tackle them. Portia's journey on Housewives is one of the most impressive journeys we've seen any of these women go through. Portia's journey was about to hit a major bump, though, In season 9, she revealed she'd heard a rumor that Candy and her husband had plotted to drug and rape her. The shocking claim, which Candy and Todd both denied, was later traced back to Candy's former BFF, Phaedra. Candy Burris. That was a hard falling out. That was horrible. Carlos King. It all started on that camping trip. Sheree told Marlo, "There are people around us accusing Candy of being a lesbian." And immediately, Marlo wanted to get down to the truth of it all. And when she posed the question at the dinner table, that infamous exchange of, "Who said that? Who said that? Who said that?" occurred. And we were watching from behind the scenes thinking we were just watching something funny unfold. We thought it was pure comedy. Candy rolled with the punches. Everyone laughed. We had no idea that moment would turn into what it did. Next thing we knew, we had Candy saying that Portia wanted to, let's just say, service her. Candy Burris. When they came at me at the campground and Marlo said, "I heard you're an in-the-closet lesbian and all that bullshit," I was just sitting there like, I've already told you guys that I've dipped my toes in the lady pond, so where's this coming from? Then, when I found out that Portia was the one who said it, it completely threw me off. Completely. Because in my mind, I was like, wait a minute, sis. You in the same boat as me. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Who are you to make it seem like I'm doing something crazy? I was completely shocked. Carlos King. Then, when Candy and Portia saw each other for a one-on-one after that camping trip, it only got worse. Accusations were flying around, one after the other. And in the midst of it all is when Portia said, "Well, I heard you wanted to drug me and take me to your sex dungeon." Which was like, what? What the fuck is happening right now? Candy Burris. When I had that lunch with Portia, I was just like, I really gotta put her on blast. Basically, at the top, I was like, if you want to talk about somebody being in the lady pond, we gonna let the people know you in the lady pond too. I was being open about the moment she and I had in the club with the whole kiss situation off camera. That was a year and a half prior to us having that argument, and it was something that neither she nor I told anyone. It was our own personal secret. So when I said, "When you kissed me in the club and said you wanted to eat me till I came," and then she was like, "Oh, you mean when you tried to drug me?" It completely threw me for a loop. I was like, "Wait, what?" I honestly almost laughed at her because I thought she was joking. And when she kept going with it, I was like, "Okay, wait, this bitch is serious?" I was so furious, I could not believe she said that. I called production like, "Obviously y'all cannot let this bitch go on national TV talking about how I tried to drug her. Like, that's insane." And they were like, "Nobody's going to believe that. Why are you worried?" But I was like, she can't just put that bullshit out into the world. Carlos King. I'll be very honest. At the time, none of the producers thought anything of what Portia said. We know Candy. We knew she would never do anything like that. We never thought this was something to follow. We saw it as, okay, Portia, that was shady, but let's move on. But Candy would not let it go. She kept bringing it up. She kept talking about it. We didn't get why this was becoming something bigger when we were all looking at it as nothing more than shade. It wasn't until Candy said that she refused to be around Portia because she thought Portia was trying to ruin her brand that we got it. She was upset. She wanted to clear her name, and rightfully so. It's her reputation on the line. But it was unexpected for us. Candy Burris. I was boiling mad at that point because I realized a person can say anything about you and just put it out there. I mean, how can someone say something like that with a straight face? I was like, this bitch is trying to make me look like a lying crazy person. Carlos King. Portia kept saying, "That's what I heard." But we had no idea who she heard it from. We were all perplexed. We kept asking, "Well, who did you hear it from?" But she wouldn't say. None of us knew. I left the show not even knowing. Believe me, If Portia told us she heard it from Phaedra, we would have used it. That's not something you say for the reunion. Cynthia Bailey. We filmed a whole season not knowing. And then, at the reunion, Portia said that Phaedra was the one who told her, which was just a total shock to all of us. Andy Cohen. I was speechless. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. That really was a watershed moment for this show, and it really was as raw as you saw. Our reactions in the control room as it was happening were exactly the same as the women's on the stage that day. Carlos King. I'd guess the reason Portia brought that up at the reunion was because she saw how the storyline played out on the show. She saw what people were saying about her on social media, and she felt the need to tell her truth and save herself. Cynthia Bailey. Once it was revealed that Phaedra was behind everything, Candy was done. Candy wanted no part of her. They had a genuine friendship for many years, but Candy was devastated Phaedra would involve herself in a plot to take her down like that. Candy Burris. Phaedra and I had gotten super close and had a lot of fun. Todd, Phaedra, Apollo, and I would all hang out as friends. But over the last two seasons, we started having a falling out. She got mad when I told Andy she should take the kids to see Apollo in prison. And there was the whole thing of her saying she was upset about Apollo having his motorcycle at our house, as if we were letting him hide stuff from her. It was just a bunch of little things. But on this show, not only do you have the drama when it happens, but then it comes on TV and happens again, which makes it worse because the fans are chiming in. And then you have it again at the reunion, and that makes it even worse. You never really have an opportunity to talk it through and dead the issue. So the things that were happening in season 7 and 8 were messed up in our friendship. But what happened in season 9? To me, that was the ultimate low. Sheree Whitfield. I sat on the stage like everybody else with my mouth open, literally crying, because I couldn't believe it and was so upset. Candy Burris. You know that feeling when you find something out about someone and it triggers your mind to go in reverse and think about every moment that person was sitting right there with you and you didn't know they were the ones pulling the strings the entire time? That's how I felt about Phaedra. So that's why I was like, yeah, I can never come around her again or be involved with her or do business with her. Cynthia Bailey. And then Phaedra blamed everything on Carlos King, saying that he had been the one who told her that. Candy Burris. She blamed Carlos, but it was a fucking lie. Carlos King. I never said anything to Phaedra about it, ever. Candy Burris. I guess Portia had a conversation with Phaedra right before the reunion to be like, are you sure Candy said that to you? And Phaedra said, yes. So when she blamed Carlos at the reunion, Portia was like, no, but you told me Candy said that to you out of her own mouth. Andy Cohen. None of us believe that was true. Phaedra had told Portia she heard it from Candy directly, but was now pinning it on Carlos. It felt fishy. Candy Burris. To be clear, I don't just blame Phaedra. I had issues with Portia for a long time because I was like, you knew what Phaedra said wasn't true. Like, you know goddamn well that we had a moment where it could have gone there and nobody made you. So stop trying to say that you believe anything this woman told you. But the fact that Phaedra said this to Portia off camera and then came back and tried to be like, oh, well, the producer told me to say it. Hell no! Cynthia Bailey. All I know is Phaedra is one of the smartest women on the show. I don't know if God himself could convince Phaedra to do something that she didn't want to do, let alone Carlos King. Carlos King. By that point, I had left the show. The season was wrapped, and both Bravo and Andy knew I was moving on from the show. So when the allegations were made that I told Phaedra that rumor, and people started saying I had been fired from Bravo because of it, I was furious. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. Carlos was not fired. We loved working with Carlos. What Carlos brought to the show was just as important to the Real Housewives of Atlanta's success as anything. But Carlos was going in his own direction. His production company was taking off, and he wanted to work on his own projects. It was a natural parting of ways. Carlos King. I'm usually a cool, easygoing guy, but I was shaking. I screamed, I cried. I thought my career was over. It was really bad. I remember Andy Cohen called my cell phone the day after filming the reunion and told me, "I just want you to know, we do not believe this. We support you." Cynthia Bailey. I just remember walking away from that reunion thinking, wow, this has gone to a scary level of lowness now. If people can just make up stuff that's hurtful to your character and your brand, and you have to watch it play out all season long, live on the TV and social media, before you can ever be vindicated, that's a problem. Because we're never going to get everyone to see the truth. So I got to be real careful now. A lot of people don't realize those rumors stuck around for a long time. Not every viewer makes it to the reunion. I'll still hear people be like, "Oh, isn't Candy the one who was trying to drug and rape Portia?" Like, you didn't see that that ended up being exposed to be not true? But it's still out there on the internet. It stays out there. As a result, Phaedra was not asked to return to the cast for the show's 10th season. Candy Burris. Nobody assured me Phaedra wouldn't be coming back. I just said, "I'm not going to be here if she's here, so if y'all want her to be here, that's fine. I'm just not going to be here." That was their own call. Because obviously it wasn't just me she lied on, she lied on production. Either way, I knew I would never, ever deal with her again. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. I don't think it was a huge surprise for Phaedra. She saw it coming. She was caught red-handed at the reunion. Even when you watch that episode back today, you can see that she just gave up. She could have said some things to make it better, but she didn't. It was like she knew she could not come back from it. The whole situation was just beyond anything we had dealt with as a network before. It was important for us at that moment to show Candy that we did not take what Phaedra did lightly. Cynthia Bailey. I had no idea Phaedra would be fired. I knew it wasn't a good look, but she was a big player on the show. She had a great relationship with Andy. She had a great relationship with the network. She would come to work, and she knew how to play her cards right. So I didn't know if this was big enough for them to do that. Andy Cohen. I loved Phaedra on the show. She made me laugh as consistently as Nene, which is saying something. And at the reunion, I felt like she was letting her peach slip away before my eyes. I kept throwing her life preservers to try to save herself to explain why she might have been so angry at Candy to make something like that up, or to profusely apologize, but she couldn't save herself. Cynthia Bailey. Andy pretty much all but said, "Girl, just apologize. Can you please just open your mouth and just say something? Can you show some kind of remorse?" And she didn't. It was just the weirdest thing. Sheree Whitfield. He kept asking her for an explanation, but she didn't have any. Cynthia Bailey. Phaedra's a lawyer, so maybe she saw an apology to mean an admission of guilt. Maybe that's why she was stuck. Because I couldn't understand for the life of me why she just wouldn't apologize. Whereas Portia got it right away. That is the one thing that saved her in the situation, because a lot of people felt she was just as guilty. To this day, Candy wants no part of Phaedra. Candy Burris. I'm glad she was able to go about her life and do what she got to do. I'm going about my life. But we just never need to communicate or do anything together ever again, period. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. Meanwhile, people always ask for Phaedra to come back, which I get. Fans miss her, and we miss her too. Candy Burris. I'll tell you what, if she comes back, you will not see me on this here show ever again. Andy Cohen. A boy can dream. After an explosive season packed with headline-making allegations, producers turned to some familiar faces for its milestone 10th anniversary season, inviting Nene and Kim back into the fold. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. Going into season 10, the draw really was for us, let's bring the OGs back. Sheree Woodfield. I don't know why they would bring the OGs back when I was already there, but they brought Kim back as a friend, which was nice. And then, what's her name? Sezen Çavuşoğlu. Nene. Sheree Whitfield. Yeah, Nene. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. With Nene, when she left after season 7, we told her the door was always open. We said, do your thing, and whenever you want to come back, we're here. Sheree Whitfield. I don't know why she came back, because we all loved filming without Nene. It was amazing without her. Perfect, really. It was so easy, because Nene has a lot of negative energy, and it was nice to not have to deal with that. Kenya Moore. When her show got canceled and she was actively looking for other work, which wasn't happening, that's when she decided to come back. Sheree Whitfield. She came crawling back. Kenya Moore. That's when she turned on me, by the way. Before, it was like, I don't mind passing the crown to you. I'm not going to be here. Go have at it. Be down here with these reality stars. I'm over here in Hollywood. And when that didn't happen, and she saw that her position was compromised, she changed. Sheree Whitfield. We were cordial on camera when Nene returned. I don't kiss people's asses on camera, but we learned over the years to just leave each other alone. Andy Cohen. It felt like we were getting the old gang back together. As a fan of the show, just the idea of all of them in the same room together felt unprecedented. Cynthia Bailey. When Kim came back, in my opinion, it was almost like you were starting over with a clean slate. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. We missed that friendship between Kim and Nene, and it looked like there was a door open where we could find a way back there. Obviously, it didn't happen like that. Sheree Whitfield. The problem, once again, was Kim hanging out with Sheree. Nene couldn't take it. Cynthia Bailey. And Kim wasn't interested in us at all. When you come back, you have to recognize that you've been out of the house for a while. You can't come back and disrespect the house just because your room has been taken. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. Every friendship you've seen fall apart on Housewives has to do with the show, every single one. Somebody gets more famous than the other, or somebody is more popular and the other one catches up to her. We see these all the time. Jacqueline and Teresa, Bethany and Jill, Leanne and Deandra. That's what happened to Nene and Kim. Sheree Whitfield. Nene's the one who started first. We showed up to her house party and she was going, I can't believe Sheree brought Kim to my house when she wasn't invited. But Nene knew I was coming to her house with Kim. We were taping. But the fans don't realize that. So they were like, yeah, that was shady of her to bring her to her house. This is why it's hard to be on the show. Fans start thinking a certain way, and you can't say, Nene knew, the producers told her. You have to take the beating and hope they hurry up and forget about it. Lauren Eskelin. Nene did not know Kim was coming to her house. That was very risky because Nene could have reacted very badly, but she didn't. She was very gracious and welcoming. Croy even came in with Brielle and joined Greg and Brent. Cynthia Bailey. For whatever reason, nobody really was feeling Kim except Sheree. And then that didn't work out for Sheree because we were looking at her like she was crazy for not acknowledging the fact that Kim was being out of line with everybody. Carlos King. Sheree, by that point, had been made a housewife. She was a friend of in season 8. Then in season 9, I rallied for her. I told the network, I really want Sheree back full time. I want her to be a housewife. She delivered. She's got some great personal storyline, and she's capable of handling it full time. And I was right, because she came in that season, and she was just fantastic. But by season 10, she became the bone collector. Cynthia Bailey. The problem was, Sheree forgot to collect the biggest bone of all that year. Now how you gonna be the bone collector and do that? The bone in question was a video Kim's daughter shot during a visit to Nene's new house, which showed a bug crawling in the reality star's bathroom. Kim showed the video to Sheree during a night out, claiming that Nene had roaches, but Sheree kept quiet about it. Later, Kim sent Nene the clip while questioning the cleanliness of Nene's home, sparking the biggest battle of the season, as well as claims that Kim was racist. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. The women were split. Nene felt like the roach comments were racially motivated. There were other people in the cast who knew Kim and did not necessarily think so. Cynthia Bailey. I personally have never had any interaction with Kim where I felt as though she was being racist to me. Now, I've definitely heard that she's done and said things to other people over the years, but she's always been very nice to me. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. We always look to our housewives to lead the way in these sorts of discussions. If a group of Black women say they felt something someone said was racist or racially motivated, I don't think it's up to us to argue otherwise. We have to honor that and hear that and accept that. Our position always is if there are these grievances, they need to be aired out and hashed out in a way that's hopefully constructive and can help change some of the behaviors moving forward. That's why we wanted to get into it at the reunion. Sheree Whitfield. You guys didn't even get to see the half of it. They were being so horrible to Kim and bad to me because I was trying to protect Kim. It was almost like Nene had gotten everyone together beforehand. Like, Portia was coming for me. But Portia and I never had a problem. Nene gets in people's ears. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. Candy did a really good job of explaining things to Kim at the reunion in a way that could maybe help Kim understand. She was able to do it in a way that didn't come from anger or hate because she wasn't in that fight with Nene and Kim. It was almost like an outside POV to lay this bare at Kim's feet. To no one's surprise, the reunion wound up being Kim's last appearance on Housewives. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. After that season, Kim felt like her own show is where she wants to be. The safety her husband Croy provides, her kids provide, her house provides, she needs that. Don't Be Tardy has a very different flavor than Housewives. It's basically a half-hour family comedy. Housewives, you're getting Kim Zolciak. Don't Be Tardy, you're getting Kim Bierman. And Kim's return to Housewives in season 10 reminded her which Kim she wants to be. Cynthia Bailey. I still don't know what Kim's strategy was, but she just came in very negative, like guns blazing for no reason. She was clearly coming for Kenya, which, no surprise, a lot of people come for Kenya, but she was saying shady stuff about all of us. Andy Cohen. I just remember Croy yelling at me in the bathroom after the reunion, telling me I didn't protect Kim enough or focus on enough positive things that had happened to her that season on the show. I sheepishly said, well, there was really nothing positive to focus on. It was the only time during this whole run where I ever felt like I was going to get punched. I thought, this is it, dude. There are so many housewives and husbands who are tired of your shady shit, and you're about to get your reckoning. What I'm relieved I didn't know at the time was that Croy had a gun with him that day. Georgia is an open carry state. And production made him leave it in the car. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. I have to say, in a perverse way, it gave us closure on the friendship and closure on Kim that we didn't get when she left in season 5. It felt like a very definitive end to Kim and Nene's friendship. Unfortunately, Kim wasn't the only one to leave RHOA that season. Sheree's time as a housewife was over again. Sheree Whitfield. They asked me to come back in season 11, but as a friend. You can come back as a friend again. And when the season gets going, you may end up being a housewife. You can always be upgraded. And I said to myself, do I need to prove myself again? Because I've already proven myself. If you don't want me to be a housewife now, after everything I brought to the table, then we don't need to do this. And right behind Sheree came another shocking RHOA exit. After 6 seasons as a housewife, Kenya Moore was MIA. Sezen Chavisholo. The problem with Kenya was, she went off and got married 2 weeks before we started filming season 10. It was just such a blatant screw you to all of us. This is a woman we watched on the show from day one, looking for love, wanting to get settled, wanting a husband, wanting a baby. And after following that journey all those years, she went and did it without us. We were happy for her, but at the same time, it didn't sit right with anyone at the network for us to then not have any access to Mark Daly. We realized at the end of season 10 that it wasn't going to work out with Kenya for season 11. She needed time away to be a wife and to have her baby and do life without the show for a little bit. And when she returned in season 12, she gave us a lot about her marriage. Obviously, none of it went the way any of us hoped it would go, which was heartbreaking to see, but I'm really grateful that she put it on camera. Kenya may not have been around in season 11, but there were a few new girls to help stir things up. First, Eva Marcel, a mom and multifaceted entertainer known to reality TV fans as the Cycle 3 winner of America's Next Top Model. She had been in the mix on RHOA since halfway through season 10 as a friend. Eva Marcel, housewife. My agent called and said Housewives was interested. At the time, I'd been living in LA, but my now husband was running for mayor of Atlanta, and I had been in Atlanta for like 8 months. I had a lot of connections to the group through the entertainment industry and knew Nene personally. Sezen Chavisholo. Eva was someone who had organic connections to our cast, but she hadn't even moved to Atlanta full-time yet when we started filming with her. And one of the things we look for when we're casting housewives is for someone to have real footing in that city. So we decided to bring her on as a friend to see where she would end up. You know, her now husband, who was her fiancé at the time, was running for mayor, so there was a chance she could be the first lady of Atlanta, which would have been amazing, although very complicated for us to shoot. But there was also a chance, if he lost, that she would move back to LA at the end of the season. So we weren't comfortable enough to commit, even though we loved her and wanted her around. Eva Marcel. I was not there 5 minutes and they were pulling me into some mess with Cynthia and her boyfriend. It was so dumb. I knew some of them might like to fight, but I assumed the women were just going to let me be on the side and smoke my little vape and chill. But oh no, that was not the case. Sezen Chavisholo. She wound up moving to Atlanta full-time, getting married, having kids. And once we saw roots were being put down, it was a no-brainer to bring her on as a full-time housewife in season 11. Eva Marcel. I struggled a bit to navigate because I didn't fit into any box that existed before. Like, on these shows, there is a company person, a villain, a girl next door. I was none of those things and didn't want any of those roles. That's why I was so taken aback all the time. It felt so foreign. Sezen Chavisholo. Eva was a great housewife. Not only did she fit in with the cast, but she also stood out. She beats her own drum. She didn't try to portray herself as something she's not. In group situations, she really found her voice. She didn't hold back from giving her opinions and formed good bonds with these women, especially Cynthia. Eva Marcel. You gotta remember the first time I did reality television. It was a competition-based show, America's Next Top Model. That was extremely new, and we lived together for 3 months in the same house. But everything was centered around a structured competition on a given day. We were trying to make it to the next level of this game, and the drama between us was just the filler. So going into Housewives, obviously I knew it wasn't a competition, but I thought they were just going to follow whatever it is we did in life. Like, I didn't realize the beast that it was to do this kind of reality show. I had no clue. Eva wound up being promoted from a friend to a full-time housewife in season 11, but departed the series at the end of season 12. Sezen Cavusoglu. With Eva, it was a mutual parting of ways. Eva Marcel. I'm not green. I understand that there needs to be some level of spice and drama. I just don't think I'm willing to give this genre the kind of drama they want. I can't generate it. With the climate of the world right now, the way Black women are on the front lines of social change and racial change and equity for so many people across the board, I had no guarantee that this show was going to dedicate a season to trying to eradicate that at all costs. Sezen Cavusoglu. There were a lot of things in Eva's life that were off limits. She wasn't opening up very much in her personal life. She found a house and moved while everybody else was on a cast trip. We weren't getting a lot of Michael or her home life, and it felt like, okay, maybe Eva's life is moving in a different direction. Eva Marcel. I'm glad I stepped away from reality TV when I did, because unless you have a proper handle on this, it can literally ruin the best of the people, the best friendships, and the best relationships. Another new housewife, Shamari DeVoe, a married mother of two, best known as the lead singer in the R&B group, Black, joined Eva as a full-time housewife in season 11, though she only lasted one season. Shamari DeVoe, housewife. They reached out to me for season 10. But at the time, I declined because I was pregnant with my twin boys and I didn't want any extra stress. But when they came back the following year, I figured I'd give it a shot. Candy and I were label mates at Columbia Records at one point, and she did the remix for Black's first single, 808. And Portia, we were on the drill team at Southwest DeKalb High School together. Sezen Cavusoglu. Shamari had the best energy. And we love that she had natural ties to some of the cast members. Plus, her husband Ronnie DeVoe, of New Edition and Belle Biv DeVoe fame, was big in the music community. Shamari DeVoe. Ronnie didn't really want me to do the show in the first place because of the drama and the cattiness that comes with reality TV. He knew that it was just going to be a lot of conflict. But we figured this would be a great opportunity to have a platform for our marriage ministry. We wanted to be transparent about the challenges we faced in our relationship and how we overcame them, to help save other couples with similar stresses. Sezen Cavusoglu. We loved having her around, and she and Ronnie were really honest about their marriage, you know, how they had started an open relationship because Shamari was bi-curious. But unfortunately, the women on the cast just didn't take to her. She couldn't connect with the larger group. Shamari DeVoe. When you're on a show like this, you really feel the pressure to be confrontational and stir up drama because that's what people want to see. But I was more interested in having fun. Sezen Cavusoglu. We kept watching, hoping she would build those bonds, and she never did. And that comes from the women, not us. She just didn't gel. And Shamari also knew it wasn't working. I don't think there were any hard feelings or anything. And then there was Tanya Sam, a tech-savvy businesswoman and philanthropist whose Canadian roots helped her stand out from the crowd. She was considered a potential housewife, but... Tanya Sam, friend. A casting agent had been pinging me on my social media, Instagram, LinkedIn, etc., trying to get my attention. But I had been ignoring it because A, I thought it was fake, and B, I just wasn't interested. And then I was at a dinner party, sitting beside Mariah Carey's then manager, Stella Balashnikov, and she said, "What? Are you kidding me? Of course you should do this. You're stupid." Sezen Cavusoglu. We liked that Tanya was so different from the women we normally meet. She has such great energy, a ball of positivity, and she's very analytical. Tanya Sam. I had watched as a casual fan on and off over the years, but I would lose at a housewives trivia game for sure. So I said, okay, let me go study this Housewives show. And I was like, ah, there's a formula here. They always have boobs out. They usually wear some sort of god-awful necklace. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. With Tanya, we wanted to make her a full-time housewife, but we could not agree on a contract. Tanya Sam. We were negotiating a peach, and the offer was there, but we figured out pretty early on that there would be no way to get past some structural thing in the full-time contract around businesses and exposure of businesses on camera. So I was like, you know what? I don't have time to go back and forth arguing with you and wasting my lawyer's time and money. I don't want the housewife contract, but I can test these waters as a friend. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. I really like Tanya in the friend role. She's able to build genuinely close relationships with the women, and it's great to have her around. She also has a very full life that we wouldn't have access to if she was full-time, so I don't think we'd get the well-rounded picture we want. Tanya Sam. As much as I love being on the show, I'm a business person before I'm on The Real Housewives of Atlanta. That's something I'm much more protective of. It was a very easy decision for me. Despite some new blood in the mix and the lack of her longtime foe, Kenya, season 11 wound up being a tough one for Nene, as she struggled to take care of her husband, Greg, amid his battle with stage 3 colon cancer. She hit her breaking point during a bi-wig party when she ripped a cameraman's shirt as he followed Portia and Candy into her closet, even though she had explicitly asked them all to stay outside. Marlo Hampton. That was a nightmare. There was a lot going on in her head. It was Greg. It was the alcohol. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. The closet situation was stressful. Obviously, she ripped the cameraman's shirt. And one of our producers went to the hospital, I believe, to get checked out. It was scary. Marlo Hampton. Nene's closet is fucking amazing. Even when it's junky, it's amazing. It's a whole damn studio apartment. I wouldn't care, but she just felt something was out and she didn't want someone or the TV to see it that way. You have to respect that. But it got a little out of hand. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. Nene really feels like The Real Housewives of Atlanta is her show and nobody else's. Behind the scenes, she'll tell you that she made the show, and she brings a lot of that energy to her dealings with Bravo, with Truly, with showrunners, and with co-stars. Marlo Hampton. You saw her grab the cameraman's shirt, but there was a lot more that night. There was yelling and fussing. It was a whole lot. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. That season, Nene was genuinely having a hard time with Greg's illness. There was a lot going on in her personal life that I have a lot of sympathy for. But you could see she also had a lot of frustrations and disappointments with the show. She felt like she wasn't being treated the way she wanted to be. And the closet incident was almost the capper of that. And again, it was that thing of showing no remorse about it that was upsetting. Because our crew works so hard. They're there for these women all the time, so that really should not happen, and there should have been an apology, but we didn't really see that from Nene. If you remember at the reunion, she completely shut down. She wouldn't acknowledge any of her castmates' feelings or her behavior. It was upsetting. Andy Cohen. That was one of several reunions where Nene completely shut down. I asked her 100 questions and got no energy back. Sheree Whitfield. Nene can dish it out, but she can't take it. Sezen Çavuşoğlu. Nene also really believed that all these girls were coming for her crown. I promise you, those girls were not ganging up on her. They were not in an alliance. They did not have a plot to take her down, but she wanted everyone to respect her as the queen bee and for them to show up and treat her as such. Andy Cohen. The queen bee stuff gets exhausting in any city. Just when Nene thought it couldn't get worse, Kenya made a surprise appearance at the season 11 finale. She was there to surprise her pal Cynthia, but Nene believes Cynthia knew Kenya was coming and set her up. Cynthia Bailey. I don't like to break the fourth wall. I don't like to throw production under the bus because I know they are there to be messy and to get a good TV show. But you cannot make someone look like a liar. And that was very hard for me at the reunion. One of the main reasons Nene and I fell out was because she felt like I knew Kenya was coming and didn't give her a heads up. Now, and I've always said this, I invited Kenya without question, but she said she wasn't coming. Why did she say she wasn't coming? Because she wasn't getting paid to come. She wasn't part of the cast. She didn't want to come and film. She was not in a good place with the network. Fast forward to, she shows up with Candy, who got her to come and surprise me. Then you see me whispering in Mike's ear, but you don't hear me saying anything. Nene's last few years on the show were tough. She spent season 12 on an apology tour, rebuilding her friendships with many of the women. So fans were surprised when the virtual Zoom reunion ended with her walking off in a fury. Lauren Esklin. She did not like how she had been treated at that reunion. Like when she came to the reunion wearing black, and all of the women were in white. She blames us for letting her be the only one not wearing white, which was not at all the way it went down. They were all going to wear white when we were going to do the in-person reunion, but that reunion got canceled because of COVID-19. So when we decided to Zoom union, we just told the women to find a gown of their own, and they all came wearing white. Whether they had their own group text about that or not, and whether Nene saw the group text or not, I don't know, but it wasn't our call. Candy Burris. The possibility of wearing white was brought up, but nobody really confirmed it. Obviously, me and Kenya, we talk all the time, so I knew she was wearing white. I knew Cynthia was talking about wearing white, as was Eva. And I decided to wear white. But I don't think it was a discussion between everybody. It just so happened that other people were having their own discussions, and they all showed up in white, too. I guess nobody gave Nene the memo. So when she came on the computer, she was wearing black, and it just made her look like she was bucking the system. Kenya Moore. And she was upset that Candy got all those spinoffs and she didn't. Candy Burris. I just didn't like the negativity and hate because when it comes to anything anyone does, I always try to support. I always try to post, even when we don't get along. I'm not upset when Portia gets opportunities. I think that's dope for her. Nene was the first one out of us to get opportunities. None of us got upset. But it was just like this unnecessary negativity coming toward me. And I just feel like it wasn't cool. I was just sick and tired of it, you know? Sezen Chavisholo. Nene had a wedding spinoff, and we tried to do a spinoff show with Nene and Kim called Nene and Kim, The Road to Riches. It was going to be almost like The Simple Life. This was back in 2015. Nene wasn't coming back for season 8, and we thought this could be a really fun way to bring these two stars back together. The problem was they weren't in a great place behind the scenes, and Nene decided she didn't want to do it. Cynthia Bailey. See, I don't know why Nene didn't have her own show on Bravo. She has all of this personality, and she has all these things going on. I've always just been waiting for that announcement. Nene announced she would not be returning to the show for season 13, along with a flurry of accusations against the network. Lauren Esklin. She had an offer to come back as a housewife in season 13. The back and forth and negotiations just took forever, and ultimately, she was not feeling that coming back was the right thing for her. We had many tearful conversations about it, and about the way she felt she had been treated at the season 12 reunion, which upset her. Sheree Whitfield. It's like she forgets that she tried to get everyone on the show fired. If you did not get along with her, she'd go out there and say, you should not be here. So now that you're not here and they don't want you, you say that you were done wrong? It's like, girl, you were one black girl trying to sabotage every other black girl on here. Are you crazy? Claudia Jordan. Don't hijack the real movement of social justice that's happening in our country right now because of your personality's shortcomings. Just because you don't get a spinoff doesn't mean it's racism. It means they don't want to see that much of you. Certainly the network, if they thought they could make a lot of money off your spinoff, they probably would have done it. Why would they not? Networks are about money. Candy Burris. For years, Nene has preached to everybody about how she was the highest paid woman for the network, regardless of whether that was true or not. Some people said, I was the highest paid. I'm certainly not comparing our coins. What I do know is that RHOA is the most popular franchise on the network, and those of us who've been on it for a long time, we're all paid more than most of the other housewives. And we're all Black. So you can't say, oh yeah, we make the most money, and then, when you get mad, say, you're racist. You know what I'm saying? Sheree Whitfield. It's strange because now Nene's talking about how she was treated unfairly, whereas a lot of us who were on the show with her feel like it was not equal because they would always cater to her. Nene always had the upper hand. They bent over backward for her. She would talk to the producers and the network like shit, but they allowed Nene to get away with a lot of stuff. Lauren Eskelin. Regarding Nene having the upper hand with producers, I will say that is always the impression cast members have when another cast member is more vocal. Just because a cast member is demanding with producers does not mean producers prioritize that cast member over the others, but the others often assume that to be true. It's inevitable with an ensemble. But the truth is, producers balance the demands of all cast members. Andy Cohen. I'm really sad about how my relationship with Nene played out. There's been no one in the run of Housewives who I've celebrated more or who has made me laugh as much as Nene. No one. Through some of the negativity, there was so much humor, heart, and, I thought, a real friendship and mutual respect. I loved her and celebrated her publicly, much, I'm sure, to the chagrin of her co-stars. The year 2020 was a horrible year for so many reasons, but the dissolution of my relationship with Nene was absolutely heartbreaking to me. Kenya Moore. I believe Nene's problem is insecurity. This is a woman who used to be a stripper, single mom, struggling, doing all kinds of things to find an older gentleman to basically get her out of the strip club, legitimize her, buy her nice things, or give her a certain lifestyle, and then put her on a platform on which she became famous overnight. Because Real Housewives made her. It didn't make Candy. It did not make Cynthia. It did not make me. It didn't make Eva. Quite honestly, it didn't make Phaedra because she was an attorney, and she was known in that world. Then you take your Porsches and your Ninis. The show literally made them, and so they come in differently. They cling to it more than somebody who can say, well, I'll get another job. This is a launching pad, not the pinnacle of my career. Lauren Eskelin. I adore Nene. It's not fun to see somebody leave feeling so unhappy about their experience on the show, especially somebody who is a founder of the show and a trailblazer of reality TV. She put her everything into this show and has become an icon. That's very hard to choose to walk away from. Andy Cohen. When Nene was on, there was no one better. She was the show's greatest cheerleader and star, and sometimes its biggest public detractor. I think her relationship with the show ultimately became toxic, and she wasn't loving it like she once had. She was great for a long time, though. Cynthia Bailey. Leaving the show doesn't take away from her success. Like, when you ask me about Nene Leakes, the only thing I'm ever going to consistently say is she's great TV. She was hands down the breakout star of Real Housewives of Atlanta. I'm always going to give her her props. She never has to give me mine. She can call me boring until the day I die, and I could care less. You think of Real Housewives of Atlanta, you think of Nene Leakes. Eva Marcel. Nene and I are not the best of friends, but listen, I don't kick nobody when they're down. Nene definitely was instrumental in building the machine that is what we're talking about right now. She has everything to do with the greatness that is the show. Lauren Eskelin. But sometimes the story is just done. and it's time to move on. It's hard not to be sad and nostalgic about that, but that's the reality of it. The only way these shows continue is if they evolve, and the only way they evolve is if there's movement in the cast. Kenya, Portia, Cynthia, Candy, eventually, they'll all move on, as they should. As Atlanta's success continues on, its legacy is not lost on its creators and stars. Sezen Cavusoglu. I feel like Real Housewives of Atlanta is one of the more important shows on Bravo. Andy Cohen. No show has made me laugh more or given us more fodder for fun on WWHL. Deshaun Snow. To be part of something so groundbreaking, I'm beyond proud. But I'm even more proud of how the show has evolved into this phenomenon. It's so entertaining. The women, the reads, they always make me laugh. They're hilarious. And the audience has embraced them so, so much. Cynthia Bailey. There's no fame like Housewives fame. I remember driving my daughter to school and passing through the drive-thru to get McDonald's breakfast. The lady who was ringing us up flipped out. It's you, you're the model. I saw you on TV last night. It was instant celebrity. I was well known in the fashion industry, but never this level of famous. Candy Burris. I was apprehensive because Real Housewives of Atlanta caught a lot of flack after the first season, especially from the African American community because they were like, oh, it's painting black women in a bad light and that we weren't represented well as far as television is concerned. So when I would mention that I was thinking about joining the show, a lot of people were like, oh, don't do that. That's not a good look. You should never be a part of something like that. And I was like, well, I don't understand. If you feel that the women that are on the show don't really represent well for black people, and you feel that I am a good representation of a black person, why wouldn't you want me to be part of the show? So I just went ahead and did it. And it's turned out all right to me. Sheree Whitfield. It's amazing to be part of this legacy. When they first pitched the show, I was like, okay, a show about mostly wealthy African-American women. I don't know about this. But there are so many people who would say, I never thought black people lived like that. I don't know if they thought we were all in the projects, but it helped people see black people in a new way. Sezen Cavusoglu. Through the years, it's given a platform to so many really strong, powerful, beautiful black women. I love how our cast has changed over the years, how they're not afraid to show us the good, the bad, and the ugly. Sheree Whitfield. We were able to share our stories, and so many people related to a lot of things we've gone through. I have people all the time tell me, I've gone through a divorce. I've had to fight for child support. I'm dating someone in jail. They've been in the same predicaments. Sezen Cavusoglu. Representation matters. This is why it upsets me how much the press leans on a few negative moments or a few negative interactions, because our show is so much more than that. Sheree Whitfield. I will admit, though, I never thought it would ever go past Atlanta. I never thought in a million years that Housewives would be this big. I was thinking they'll do OC, New York, and Atlanta. That'll be it. What did I know? Part 4. Flipping the Table. The Real Housewives of New Jersey. Premiere date, May 12, 2009. Family offered a new spin on the Housewives. Andy Cohen. Dina Manzo, housewife. It all kind of stemmed from Chateau Salon. I went there, Jacqueline went there, Danielle went there. Victor, the owner, said to me, I've been approached to find some girls. At the time, they were saying it was a show called Jersey Girls, and it was about women who could do it all. Jacqueline Larita, housewife. My five-year-old son was entering into full-day school that year, and I was a little bored, so I was ready to go back to work. Lucilla D'Agostino, executive vice president of programming and founding partner, Sirens Media. We were calling it something like, The Ladies of New Jersey, the kind of boring working title you give a show when you don't want to acknowledge that maybe it'll be a Real Housewives show. Jacqueline and Dina were a win for casting. Not only were they close friends, but they were also sisters-in-law, with Jacqueline married to Dina's brother, Chris Larita. Lucilla D'Agostino. We loved the sister-in-law angle, sort of the outsider in the close-knit family. She had to always be aware of that unspoken line and navigate those complicated relationships. Jacqueline Larita. I liked the thought of making money while just living my life, so after a long negotiation, I signed on. Lucilla D'Agostino. As for Dina, she was very glamorous. She was that pretty girl in high school with a nice car and good hair. It seemed like everything would go right for a girl like Dina. Yet she also had this mysterious husband who was never around. Dina Manzo. We were going through issues. When we were casting, I caught my husband cheating. So I was sitting there in my pre-interview saying, my husband and I are going to remain friends, but we're getting separated. Then when I forgave him and we were back together, I told Andy Cohen, you need to burn that casting reel. I said things in the heat of the moment of a scorned woman. Carlos King. I had just come from Atlanta when I met Dina. I saw Nene-like star quality. There's nothing like a pretty woman who is snarky, because it shows you she has personality and spunk. If Dina would have stayed on that show, I promise you, Dina Manzo would have been a legend. Dina Manzo would have been among the greats. From there, Jacqueline and Dina began recruiting, though they didn't go far. Jacqueline quickly recommended her other sister-in-law, Caroline Manzo, a fiercely loyal and perhaps overprotective mother of three who always put family first. Lucilla D'Agostino. Caroline and Dina are sisters. Caroline's older, but they're like two of 11 children. And they happened to marry brothers, which was obviously a unique story to tell. Andy Cohen. It was so confusing to me that Caroline and Dina were sisters. They looked nothing alike, and they were married to brothers. I couldn't wrap my head around it. Lucilla D'Agostino. The thing that made it exciting was that this was now shaping up to be a group of women, most of whom happened to be from an Italian cultural background, who not only lived within a 7-mile radius of one another, but who were also mostly related. Andy Cohen. The Sopranos was big at the time, and here we had a cast made up of real Jersey Italian women. They spoke the language of New Jersey. Family offered a new spin on the housewives. Sherry Levine. What did Caroline say? Blood is thicker than water? That made the series compelling in a totally different way, because you can't get away from family. Those bonds are very deep and can be quite tortured. Everybody relates to that. Lucilla D'Agostino. Plus, unlike all of the other cities that had called themselves Real Housewives, these were actual stay-at-home moms. They were real Real Housewives. They made their families dinner every night and cleaned their own homes. They had the kinds of problems that come with being sisters and sisters-in-law and mothers. It wasn't a glimpse behind the gates of glamorous McMansion communities like you got on some of the other franchises. Caroline Manzo, housewife. When they were doing the audition tapes, they were at Jacqueline's house and she said to them, you really should go see my sister. When she called and told me, I said, Jacqueline, what am I going to do with that? At that point, I didn't know anything about housewives, but I didn't think it was a good fit. By the time I hung up the phone, they were at my door because Jacqueline literally lives down the block. So I just pointed at my chest and said, these are real, and I love my husband. I don't belong on reality TV. But they wanted to film anyway, and I'm the kind of person who's like, you're here, you unpacked all your stuff. I won't be rude, just do it. Lucilla D'Agostino. What I loved about Caroline was that she was like the sane sage we all know in families like this. The person you go to on the side, like the consigliere, to ask, what should I do? Andy Cohen. Caroline reminded us of Edie Falco as Carmela Soprano. And her family was funny. I mean, in the original casting, her son Chris Manzo talked about wanting to open a car wash strip club. You know, they just popped. Caroline Manzo. My husband said to me, do me one favor. Do not try to be anything but yourself. I love you the way you are. Just be you. And I was like, well, I can't sell anything but me. So if you're looking for the person with heels and makeup and glamour, you got the wrong girl. Lucilla D'Agostino. Caroline was not trying to say she was glamorous. She was not trying to say she was rich. She was a hard-working woman with a really strong opinion. You hadn't seen that type of housewife yet. Instead of bragging about her cars and her houses, she was bragging about her kids. Among the girls gathered were two friends from Paterson, New Jersey, a sweet stay-at-home mom of four named Teresa Judice, and Dolores Catania, a divorced mother of two and tough-as-nails former cop. Dina Manzo. I recommended Teresa and Dolores. Teresa Judice, housewife.
Dina told the producers about me. They were looking for beautiful women with beautiful houses who had it all going on.
Lucilla D'Agostino. There were 1,000 things we loved about Teresa. She was obsessed with her kids, dressing them in bows and taking pictures of them. And her husband, Joe, was the guy you see in the movies about New Jersey, this hardworking, blue-collar guy in construction, trying to give his family everything he thought they deserved. These people worked very hard. People make fun of New Jersey, but Teresa was building this castle of a house, and she was proud of it. Jacqueline Lurita. I talked Teresa into joining. She was reluctant at first, but I knew she was a character, so I was persistent and got her to sign. Dina Manzo. We were all friends. Teresa and Dolores, they'd known each other since they were kids. Dolores Catania, housewife. Teresa was doing it, and Dina and I were very close back then. Jacqueline Lurita. Dolores Catania was almost one of our cast members, but she backed out because her boyfriend at the time didn't like the idea of her doing it. Dolores Catania. I backed out because after I had my first interview, they started asking me all these questions about my friends. Back then, friends were friends. I would never say anything bad about my friends. But the next day, I got a call from Jacqueline and Teresa both saying, "What did you say about my husband?" That's when I was like, you know what? I'm out. I don't want to do this. I don't like the way it feels. With Dolores out, a space on the cast opened up, one that would be filled by one of the most talked about figures in Housewives history. Dina Manzo. There was room for one more, so I said to Victor, "What about that girl that goes to the salon, Danielle?" Because they were always telling us stories of this woman who came to the salon. And Victor was like, "You don't want her." Jacqueline Lurita. I suggested Danielle because the scouters liked the idea of recruiting a single divorced mother to the group. Dina had heard she was a wackadoo, which I figured would most likely make good TV. Danielle Staub, housewife. I went for my hair color at Chateau Salon, and in came the characters who would in the future be known as the cast of The Real Housewives of New Jersey. I was at the tail end of a 6.5-year divorce. But at the time, I was still pretty loaded up with my gems, and I was driving a different car almost every day because nothing had been liquidated or divided from the divorce. So apparently, they were watching me and I didn't even know. Dina Manzo. Jacqueline and I were supposed to take her out to lunch to kind of see if she was good crazy or bad crazy. But instead, Jacqueline went to the salon and saw Danielle sitting there and was like, "You want to be on TV?" Jacqueline Lurita. Of course Danielle was interested. Danielle Staub. Had I not just gotten divorced, I would have never, ever signed on for anything like this. But Jacqueline was quick to become my friend, and she was very insistent on me doing this. I was looking for something new. These women led me to believe we'd be a group of friends, and this would be a good time for all. So I said to my kids, I said, "What do you think?" They were like, "Well, you need new friends." Famous last words. Carlos King. I was mesmerized by Danielle. She had a lot of baggage that she was open about, and it was interesting to dig deep and peel back the layers with her. Lucilla D'Agostino. In my opinion, Danielle was one of the most fascinating characters. She was truly the outsider. She was going through a horrible divorce, and raising these two daughters by herself. So you have a single mom, and then you have this close-knit family that's going to rally around one another come hell or high water. Put that all together at a dinner table, and you have a real interesting cross-section. With the cast in place, Bravo ordered the show to series as the fourth installment in the Real Housewives franchise. Jacqueline Larita. When we were finally told it was a Real Housewives franchise, I watched the first season of Orange County and decided I would be fine doing a show like that. I really didn't think anyone would watch it. But I was very open with my life anyway, so I was fine with it. Dina Manzo. I was a fan of Orange County, but we were signing our contracts just as Atlanta started airing, and I knew the direction of that show was different than OC. So when they told us, guess what, we're going to be part of this franchise, my stomach just dropped. Carlos King. When you're an Italian family, you don't just electively spread your business to a bunch of strangers. So season one, it was very protective. It was very much like, I'm only going to give you what I want you to know. Lucilla D'Agostino. There are little moments of that first season that are burned into my brain, like Danielle walking around her pool in high heels and a bikini. That was pure classic Danielle. That, in my opinion, is one of the best housewife entrances in season one of any housewives show. Carlos King. And when Teresa went on that all-cash shopping spree, that was her own money. We didn't think she would bring that much money. We were like, oh, stacks on stacks. Okay, get it, girl. We were floored. At that time, of course, none of us in production is thinking like, there's some shady shit going on behind the scenes. We just thought she was a rich bitch. Lucilla D'Agostino. I was always trying to make a show that was about what was really happening. I wasn't trying to come up with fake country club scenes. I wasn't trying to throw fictitious white parties to entice women to get drunk and be the worst versions of themselves. I'm just trying to tell their story. And that's why I do love them all, because I know the humanity in every single one of them. Carlos King. It's a learning experience when you first start these shows. Keep in mind, I had only done one season of Atlanta at this point. But like the Atlanta housewives, the Jersey girls quickly adapted. They had it. Lucilla D'Agostino. The ladies were each iconic and unique in their own right. If we needed funny, we would always go to Jacqueline. If we needed someone to just tell the truth, no bullshit, and say what the viewer would say, that was Caroline. If you needed someone to deliver a line that was meme-worthy, cutting, super bitch, and delicious, it was Dina with her, she wants to skin me and wear me like last season's Versace. She was the girl you'd want to have brunch with, because she's pretty and smart, but she's got a mouth. Teresa's in her own world. What comes out of Teresa's mouth? One time, we told her we had to wrap filming because a nor'easter was coming. And then she went on set and said, you guys, we have to wrap up filming because a Norwegian is coming. And we put that in the show. It's not ditzy, but it's kind of like she's on her own fucking planet. And Danielle, a lot of people have burnt and hurt Danielle. As she got older, she found her voice. So when all of the other women were worried about looking too aggressive or too mouthy or too tough, Danielle would go in and say the thing you don't say. But some of the things Danielle said gave Caroline and Dina pause. And soon, a rivalry grew between family and friend that left Jacqueline conflicted. Carlos King. It was painfully obvious that Caroline and Dina didn't like Danielle. Painfully obvious. Dina doesn't have a poker face, so whenever they were in the same room, Dina's piercing, beautiful blue eyes would just go across the room and give Danielle the death stare. Everyone knew. Teresa tried to be cordial because Teresa was the sweet one. Jacqueline was Danielle's friend, so Jacqueline was in the middle between her sister-in-law and her girl. But we all knew that the Manzos did not like Danielle. Danielle was not paranoid. Danielle Staub. In hindsight, I realized Dina was very worried that I was going to expose their family secrets. Dina Manzo. I was so innocent. Like, my first husband was my first kiss, my first everything. I never even cursed until I was 30. Danielle wanted some of that. Sometimes you hate people because they're a mirror of what you're not. That's why I was her target, because I was such a goody two-shoes. Danielle Staub. Dina had a problem with me because she wasn't happy with herself. For some reason, I rubbed her the wrong way. But Jacqueline was a sweetheart. She was a pretty good friend to me. Not that I asked her to be, but she seemed very interested in my life. And I felt bad for Jacqueline. I felt like she wasn't being treated like a part of her own family. According to her side of the story, Caroline had a big opposition to Jacqueline and her mothering skills. She was being treated pretty unkind. Not helping Danielle's footing in the group was Cop Without a Badge, a 1996 book about the life of Danielle's felon-turned-informant ex-husband, Kevin Marr, that found its way into the hands of the Jersey housewives. The tell-all inspired a sea of questions about Danielle's past, including her alleged run-ins with the law and her 19 engagements. Dina Manzo. Here's what happened. We were at a party at the Brownstone, and I walked in the office and my niece Candace was at the computer and she's like, "You'll never guess what I found." A friend of hers tipped her off and said, "You might want to look into this Danielle character." Caroline and Jacqueline and I all crowded around the computer and we were shocked. So Caroline and her friends went to the library and got the book. Carlos King. We kept asking them, "What is it about Danielle you girls don't like? We don't get it." Because it's hard to produce this show when everyone's just saying, "She's wacky." It needs to be deeper than that. So we were pushing them, and that's when they said, "Read the book." We were 5 weeks into shooting the show before I heard a peep about this book. And I was shocked because I was assigned to Danielle at that time, and Danielle told me nothing about a fucking book. Lucilla D'Agostino. It's not like we started off the first episode going, "This whole season is going to unfold about a book." We didn't know. And we were capturing it in real time.